The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting again, day two in the saddle for Dory, as Dory is experiencing some much needed rest and relaxation. And so is Nicole. So now today with me is producer Chris, and Aaron is here, of course. And I had some questions for Aaron, but if you want to hold tight, Aaron.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm here.
Okay. Hold tight and we'll put you on. No, I'm not going to put you on. Of course not. So much to get to here. A big news day. In fact, right when we closed yesterday was when Joe Biden and then subsequently Jay Inslee gave their press conferences, and tons of blowback, certainly for Biden's press conference, because it reeks of overreach by the federal government. And you already have tons of governors, I think now 14, who are saying they are readying a lawsuit as soon as this becomes an executive order. That means they have the legal language to work with, and this will certainly make its way up to the state as well. So we're going to get into that and a lot more in coming up too, as we're celebrating the anniversary of 9/11. I have an interview with a first responder who was there, as a firefighter when the towers were hit, and he just has an amazing story. Unfortunately, almost a miraculous story, really. His colleagues, most of them, lost their life that day because they went one way and he was ordered to go another. But we're going to hear a firsthand account of that day. Me, being a New Yorker, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, been in Seattle now almost a decade. But it is such a sad day. And as we reflect on, for most Americans, just absolutely sad day. But as we reflect on the anniversary, we have an amazing interview. But first, we are going to get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
And really, the top story, we can go through Biden and Inslee, all these mandates that are coming down the pike here. But Biden's in particular, Inslee's was awful too, but Biden in particular gave us so much, and I used the word yesterday, it's a schizophrenic message that is meant to convince no one, but it instead is meant to badger people, shame people, and show contempt for those who have made their own health decision in consultation with the people close to them. And right now we're getting to a system of a medical Jim Crow, and almost like a social credit system that China has, where you are punished and you are rewarded depending on whether you follow a government edict or not. And that is not how America is governed. Here is Biden. I think the worst part, there were many awful parts of his speech, but the worst part of the speech is when he takes direct aim at America's founding charter of freedom.
We need to do more. This is not about freedom or personal choice. It's about protecting yourself and those around you, the people you work with, the people you care about, the people you love. My job as president is to protect all Americans.
Actually, doofus, your job as president is to uphold the Constitution. And the Constitution is about government securing rights of the people. It is about freedom. Whether you want to inject a drug into your body or whether you don't. It's amazing that this conversation, by the way, is happening with the Texas law that the left is hyperventilating about in the backdrop. Because now we're having, and it appears that this irony is being lost on those who are advocating vaccine mandates, but also opposing the new abortion restrictions, because you have those who are opposing these abortion restrictions with the predictable chance, my body, my choice, my body. We've heard that for decades. My body, my choice. Now, I'm sorry, when you have another heartbeat that's on the inside of you, it's no longer, I think, your choice to end it. But that's a separate conversation. If it is your body, your choice on whether or not you end life, or if you think it's the potential of life, regardless, it's your body, your choice. But you don't have that choice when it comes to injecting something into your body that you may not be comfortable with. Now, listen, the vast majority of people I know who've gotten vaccinated have not had any adverse reaction in the short term. So for me, it's like, I don't care whether a person goes and gets it or decides they don't get it. If it's made and the decision is made in an intellectually honest way in consultation with not only medical professionals, but their own doctor and their own research, then fine. Let people make the personal decision. But for Biden to say this is not about freedom, it's always about freedom. And in fact, when the government has to have a strict rationale for curtailing anyone's freedom. And COVID is not that. When you have a virus that the vast majority of people who are going to get over, I had COVID. Okay? My entire family got COVID. It sucked for like 3 or 4 days. But after a week, I was fine. And I had those natural, now I have those natural antibodies, which are far more robust pumping through my system than those who have the vaccine. But when you have a virus that had the vast majority of people going to get over just fine, the government does not have a rational basis to go ahead and force you to get something, inject something into your body in order to participate in civil society. Now, I think employers can do it. I think it's unfortunate if they do, and I still think it's an invasion of medical privacy by demanding employees' medical records. But listen, if you want to set your business up that way, okay. But for the government to start now mandating that private employers who have more than 100 employees do this, I'd be surprised if this thing stands up in court. But then we have the schizophrenic messaging on the part of Biden, the schizophrenic messaging. And here is where it is raising more questions. We know that the caseload is increased by 300% from this time last year. And last year, nobody was vaccinated. That raises questions. But I know in today's climate, you can't ask questions, because anytime you ask questions, now you're pinned in as an anti-vaxxer. If you ask questions on the efficacy, if you ask questions regarding the possible effects, you know what? Speaking of effect, the National Institute of Health just recently announced that they were diverting nearly $2 million to study the effects the vaccine may have on the female menstrual cycle. Now, after the fact, right? After all these doses have been distributed. Now, it may have no effect. But when people have a hesitancy or they are concerned with something that's brand new, nobody knows the long-term effects, if any, it's not to raise these questions, it's not to be anti-vax, it's to be cautious. And when you have the National Institute of Health, that's right, the bureaucracy that Fauci is a part of, saying, all right, we'll study this, we've heard reports, we've heard complaints about this, so we're going to go ahead and look into it now. Now, I would say, why didn't you look at this ahead of time? Before is in widespread distribution. I think that's a reasonable question. Nothing may come out of this study. Something may come out of this study. But to just dismiss people as like these cave-dwelling conspiratorial loons, like Inslee saying, oh, you know, people think there's like a chip that's going to control your body in the vaccine. Yeah, but there's always nuts out there. We're on the anniversary of 9/11. We have 9/11 truth. Pete Carroll. Shoot, is a big truther. You have people who are truthers out there that, oh, you know, fire can't melt steel. It was an implosion dumped by the government. Yo, we're seeing these planes hit the towers. No, that's all an illusion. You're always going to have conspiratorial nuts out there. But to label everyone and to lump everyone in that category is disingenuous, who may have legitimate caution. But here is Biden where I think he loses people. If it's so safe and so effective, then why is Biden saying that you have to have the vaccine you have to have people vaccinated. The unvaccinated are endangering the vaccinated. Do we have that clip, by the way, Chris? I don't see it here in my sheet. I was about to play it.
I believe it's he touches on that on the first one.
Okay, we're gonna play it this one.
This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and it's caused by the fact that despite America having unprecedented and successful vaccination program, despite the fact that for almost 5 months, free vaccines have been available in 80,000 different locations, we still have nearly 80 million Americans who have failed to get the shot. And to make matters worse, there are elected officials actively working to undermine the fight against COVID-19.
Well, that wasn't there was a clip, though, and maybe we'll get to it, but where Biden specifically says that the unvaccinating are causing risk to the vaccinated. And it's also something that Inslee had echoed as well. But how is that the case? How are unvaccinated, if you're vaccinated, and this is with the schizophrenic messaging, if you're vaccinated and you're saying you're fully protected from severe injury and severe illness or hospitalization, then what does it matter what your coworker does? What does it matter that your neighbor does? It's the person who doesn't have it and maybe should that's putting themselves at risk. But right now we have a push because we don't have Donald Trump in the office and in the Oval Office anymore. He's no longer that foil. He's no longer, you know, the boogeyman to attack. You need another group. And with Biden's favorability ratings plummeting after this absolute disaster in Afghanistan, the economy not picking up as it is, and a virus still ripping through the country, he needs someone to blame. So he's going to go ahead and blame the unvaccinated. But it raises questions on the efficacy. And it's Biden's own people that are raising the questions. Is it effective? Yes. Then what does it matter what my neighbor does? If it's not effective, now here's the thing. Overseas in Israel, you have plenty of people who are vaccinated who are ending up in hospitals and are actually ending up severely ill. They're saying that the efficacy of the vaccine wanes, thus the booster shots in Israel is promoting the booster shots, and we're going to be doing booster shots here. Okay, but it's not like we're having the honest conversation here about who is at risk, who is not at risk. Does Biden ever tell people over a certain age and of a certain health status, hey, listen, you really need to get this, and this is why? Because the vast majority of people who don't meet that criteria are going to be fine. And then we have we're going to get to this. The complete ignoring of those who have natural immunity. Dr. Fauci, Anthony Fauci, was actually asked about this. Do we have that one in the first cut? Oh, maybe we'll get to it. Well, Fauci's asked on CNN about those who have the natural immunity and studied. There's been at least 15 studies, but one recently at Israel that showed that it is almost 30 times more robust in protection than those who have been vaccinated. And why are they not included as people who have been protected? There was one professor out of George Mason University who actually sued his university and won successfully because he said, listen, I don't need this vax mandate. It shouldn't apply to me. I have natural immunity. I've been tested. Here's my results. And in fact, I'm at elevated risk, inflammation risk, if I have natural immunity, plus I'm getting jabbed. These cookie-cutter approaches, one-size-fits-all approaches and tapestry does not work well when you're dealing with human beings who can make choices for themselves, who have their own personal medical histories. It should have been case closed from the beginning where, listen, go ahead, talk to your doctor. After consultation with your doctor, if you think this is right for you, go ahead. That's it. Case closed. But that's not where we are. We have a direct attack on people's civil liberties. A direct attack to force private businesses. For Biden to say this is not about your freedom, something that Inslee echoed. Biden also saying that he is going to punish. I know we have this one. Oh, yeah. that he's going to use his powers to get bad governors out of the way. Listen to this.
Let me be blunt. My plan also takes on elected officials in states that are undermining you and these life-saving actions. Right now, local school officials are trying to keep children safe in a pandemic while their governor picks a fight with them and even threatens their salaries or their jobs. Talk about bullying in schools. If they'll not help, if these governors won't help us beat the pandemic, I'll use my power as president to get them out of the way.
That's it. I'll use my powers as president. We have a federalist system. That means most of the authority is given to local domains, state and localities, to govern their people through the legislative process. The actual federal government, we talk about the Constitution, have very, very strict roles on what they can and cannot do. The Constitution, by the way, is governed by the Declaration of Independence, and most people fail to realize this, but I just was meditating and thinking about it earlier compared to Biden's awful, draconian, authoritarian speech yesterday, where it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or which was updated from Locke, which was life, liberty, and property. That is, government does not give you rights. It is not arbitrary. It is not capricious. The government not could say, oh, for you to live in this society, for you to work, for you to be employed, you must get an injection in your body that you're not, you know, that you don't want. That is a complete usurpation of civil liberties. America was different and separated from the rest of the world. Why? Because we were a government of laws and not of men. And yet now we have president upon president. It's not just with Biden, but predates Biden, with Trump and Obama as well, just offering edicts. It leapfrogs the legislative process, where people can appeal to directly to someone who represents them in their district, and this can move forward legislatively, as it should be, as Congress was considered the most powerful branch, the legislative branch, the most powerful branch, not the executive branch, certainly not the judicial branch. It is completely disturbing. And by the way, we heard so many, for years, we heard about the 25th Amendment and getting Trump out of office because he was unfit. This right here is unfit for office. It is a dereliction of duty by Joe Biden to go ahead and try to force people against their will to inject something in their body. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Dory Monson. We have an interview coming up from a 9/11 first responder. You're not going to want to miss it. A lot more COVID news. We'll get to Ensley. We'll be back in a flash. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory today. Tomorrow marks the 20th anniversary of 9/11. It's amazing. 20 years have gone by. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. It's particularly a sad day for me. I remember watching on my television. I was away in college when this happened, and just watching glued to my TV the entire day. Couldn't get in touch with my family all in New York. I know my dad had traveled into Manhattan often and just couldn't get a hold of him. And it was a experience that I would never want to relive and would never forget. And just the sadness as a New Yorker. I would bring friends who came from out of town all the time, did the tourist thing, go to Manhattan, and they'd want to see the World Trade Center. So we take them to the Twin Towers. So I must have done it dozens and dozens of times. It was just a staple, a feature in New York City that we certainly took for granted and never thought anything like what happened on 9/11 would have happened. But it did. And during this 20th anniversary, we have the debacle going on in Afghanistan and the Taliban retaking Afghanistan, which was the staging ground for the 9/11 planning. But I don't want to get into that. What I wanted to do is speak to a family friend, someone I've known for decades, who was at the scene, 9/11, as a first responder. He was a firefighter with the New York City Firefighting Department for 22 years. And we hear tons of stories, firsthand accounts of what happened for people who were there. And this has to be one of the most chilling and stirring stories I've heard, and truly miraculous account. And I think you'll agree once you hear it yourself. So I'd like to welcome to the Dory Monson Show, John Piccirillo. And he is a pastor now at the church, House on the Rock in Staten Island. He is the founder of the company Lions Pride Leadership Company. And for 22 years, he was a firefighter with the city of New York until he retired. And he was there on 9/11. Pastor John, welcome to the Dory Monson Show with me, Jason Matera.
Hi, Jason. Good to be with you, buddy.
Great to have you on. So it's always Pastor John from to me coming from. That's all I remember calling you. So it's hard to like get over that and say. I was thinking about do I say welcome John to the program? It just felt weird. So I'm just going to stick with what felt comfortable. So I'll stick with Pastor John.
Whatever you're comfortable with, yeah. It'll work.
So tell me about the start of 9/11. You're a firefighter. You're stationed in Brooklyn in the morning. Take us to what happened that day.
Okay. That tour was actually, I was paying somebody back. It wasn't even my tour, it was someone else's. So I mutualed into that. The previous Saturday, they worked for me because I had something else to do. And I came in that morning, and if you remember that day, it was like a spring day. It was beautiful, blue skies. And it was an ordinary day tour. It was the change of tours early in the morning when you get at the quarters. Everyone's sitting around a table in the kitchen. Guys going off from the night tour and us coming in from the day tour. And just a lot of talking, maybe exchanging some information, a lot of laughter. You know, just regular stuff that goes on every day in the firehouse. And then we see on TV, we always have the news on in the morning, and a picture of the North Tower with this billowing smoke from it. And we could see the stream underneath, and it says airliner crashes in to the North Tower. And so we knew immediately that we were going to be going. And in that, if you remember well, at the area of Sunset Park, that 4th Avenue, how wide that is. And once we get on there, we could actually get all the way down into the tunnel. Then it was the Battery Tunnel. I think today it's the Ucari Tunnel, I think. And we can get into Lower Manhattan faster than a lot of the units trying to navigate the traffic. 2 minutes later, the tone alert, and we're on our way, headed down 4th Avenue. And I just remember catching a glimpse of the towers every once in a while when there's an opening down there. We could see into Manhattan briefly, and a huge smoke coming up. And I would estimate, at the time, I'm thinking, this has got to be 70 floors up, maybe 80 floors up. And I'm thinking, my goodness, it's just, you know, you're thinking high rise and everything go through your mind. And we didn't think much of it, just an accident, until we approached the tunnel. And as we're approaching the tunnel, the South Tower gets hit. And we have the radio on in the rig there. It's me and the chief. I was in the battalion that day. And he put the radio on and says, you know, let's see if we can get a reporter there, flagging people down and get a better picture before we get there. Because our radio transmissions were getting garbled as we got closer. And sure enough, there was a reporter, and we heard him say, just as he pulled somebody over, he says, I'd like to ask you a question. And then the reporter says, oh, my God, another plane just hit. The South Tower has been struck. So the chief and I looked at each other. We know this is no accident. And we said the word at the same time. We said terrorist. And now, you know, you're in overdrive. You're thinking now it's not just a high rise. There's a whole another series of things you're looking out for. So we pull in, I think, a block away. We park the rig, and we suit up. We walk down, and I get to across the street. And those who are not familiar with the area, it's West Street is the main street right in front of the two towers. And directly in front of the South Tower sits the Marriott Hotel. That was a 22-story hotel. And the two streets opposite that, if you're coming from the south, it would be Liberty Street, and then north would be Vesey Street. So that's where the towers were. It was West Street between Liberty and Vesey. And I look up, and these huge holes in both towers and flames, and just you're thinking all of these things you got to do. So I went to the staging area. The staging area was in the Marriott Hotel in the lobby. So I make my way into the lobby to catch up with the chief because he went on ahead of me to get the assignment and see what it is. And that's what the staging area is. Everyone receives their assignments. I get in there. There's got to be at least 100 firefighters and then a number of police there, EMS, everyone, every kind of first responder was in there, and they're getting their assignments. So we get ours, and it's the 75th floor of the North Tower. So the chief I was with, Ed Henry, who unfortunately passed away last year, but he looked at me and he says, listen, we'll go as far as we can and do what we can. It's just, this is unprecedented. He says, all right. Now, anyone who's familiar with the towers there, from the hotel, there's this, from the lobby, there's a corridor that goes right into the lobby of the North Tower. So that's where we're going to go. We took two steps and we heard this rumbling sound. And in about 3 seconds, we could feel the floors vibrating. Now, I've never been in an earthquake, but I got to think this is the closest it can be. Everything's vibrating and shaking. It only lasted maybe about 10 seconds. And things came crashing down around us, the most violent thing I ever experienced. And just in a second, everyone's on the floor. It's pitch black and deadly silence. And we didn't know. That the South Tower had collapsed on top of the hotel. We had no idea. We thought it was terrorists, so maybe something exploded in the hotel. We had no idea what this was. So we got up and we put our flashlights on, and we realized we're trapped. We got can't go back behind me. It's everything, twisted steel, concrete, floor to ceiling, one end of the lobby to the other. That corridor is just packed with debris that caved in there, so we were looking at each other and decided, all right, what you normally do. We took a roll call. Who do we have with us? There was about 10 or 15 of us right there. It was only 3 feet behind me where the collapse zone was. That's how close we came.
We're speaking and with we're speaking with Pastor John Piccarelli. He was a first responder firefighter on scene at 9/11. And, you know, we only have a few minutes, Pastor John. So at this point, you guys are trapped, and I want to get to your story where you went one way and your colleagues with another way, and then the aftermath of that. So, just in a few minutes, if you can just bring us to that that process.
Sure. Okay. So what we did is I helped dig out two guys with there's a group of us, and we started to look for a way out. We found an opening. To this day, I don't know what it was. It was an opening. It looked like a windowsill, but it looked like a delivery area. So that's the best I can tell you. And you didn't recognize West Street. It was ridiculous. It was just debris everywhere. And some of the firefighters were going out over the wall. Now, you're facing West Street, and you would go out. You go to the left. It was toward Liberty. That's where many of them went. They went south. And I was thinking of following them. We had injured people with us trying to get them over the wall. And
actually, Pastor John, I don't want this is too important. I don't want to cut this interview short. Do you mind hanging on the break and we just pick this right back up in the next segment? Because you guys are trapped and you find a way out. Your company goes one way, you go another. And I just want to leave it right there for the listeners. And we'll pick it back up in the next segment. This is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory Monson. We'll be back with an interview with Pastor John Piccarelli, who's a firefighter 22 years and was there on 9/11 as we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We'll be back in a flash. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory Monson. I want to get right back to our interview. It's with a man named Pastor John Piccarelli, who is a who was a first responder during 9/11, a firefighter for 22 years in New York City. He currently is the founder of a organization called Lions Pride Leadership Company. Pastor John, I want you to pick up where you left off. You're in the Marriott Hotel, and one of the towers collapses. And why don't you take us from there?
Okay. We arrived at an opening on a West Street, and there's about 10 or 15 of us. And the guys were going out over this wall, what I had mentioned earlier. It was probably a knee wall or something. And they were going left down toward Liberty Street. And I was going to follow them. But the chief of department was outside, and he's waving to me. And the chief that was with me looked at me and says, you can't go. You got to go to him. He's talking to you. So I look at him. Sure enough, he's looking right at me. So I go out. I go over to him. He sends me in the opposite direction, north, where the command post was. And he says, you know, he needs several units to get down there to help him out right away. I said, all right. So I turned, and I started walking north toward Vesey Street. I'm directly in front of the North Tower. When I looked up just for a second, I saw a big aerial swaying, and then the building collapses. And I just had enough time and took a couple of steps across the street, dove behind a truck. This stuff blew past like a hurricane. I couldn't believe it. And then it was like deathly silence for several minutes. Couldn't see a hand in front of your face. It was like inside. Pitch black, you couldn't see anything. I would find out later, afterwards. I stayed there till 8 o'clock at night working. The aftermath of that was I find out that those who were with, who got to that window, anybody who went left lost their life in the second collapse. The only ones who survived, I think there was three or four of us who went out and went right, we survived. And I look at that to this day, I call it a God thing, that there were four guys at that window, five guys at the window, and the chief of department waves me on. And I don't, you know, I don't know how to take that. Nobody's better than anybody else. But that saved my life. And so that day, I told the family that. And I look back at that, and for a year or so, dealing with the whole post-trauma thing like everyone else did, but it was just an amazing experience. But I was happy that the two guys we helped dig out in the first collapse both survived both of them.
Yeah. What, as we, tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. What are the thoughts going through your mind as you reflect?
First of all, I can't believe it's 20 years. But when it gets to this week before and the week after, you could feel it. And the other guy is the same thing. The difficult thing is now 20 years out, we're starting to lose a lot of our friends who went down there, not only on 9/11, but for weeks following at the site, helping with the search and recovery. And they're starting to pass on now because of the related illnesses from breathing things in, things they were subjected to when they were down there. And it just makes it all the more difficult. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I went to two funerals, two guys I worked with. So it still gets difficult. And, you know, it's just part of our life. And you realize this is what it is. But we'll never forget that the camaraderie on that day, police, fire, EMS, there's military on the scene, everybody was one. And that was the most amazing thing, like clockwork. Everybody knew what to do and went to it. And those are the biggest things I think about.
Yeah.
Just amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, we totally appreciate your service, 22 years as a firefighter. I mean, first responders have thankless jobs to begin with. And then you're always on call, never knowing when this call may be your last. And for many of your colleagues, in fact, for firefighters in general, they lost their lives highest amongst the first responders. So we appreciate your service during 9/11 as we reflect on 20 years later. Pastor John Piccirillo is our guest today on the Dory Monson Show. His organization is called Lions Pride Leadership Company, which you can find online at lionsprideleadership.com. I'm Jason Matera. You're listening to Dory Monson Show. We have the Fastest 15 coming up. We'll be back in a flash.